Welcome to the Wednesday night Brain Pickup Pro teleconference. And we're coming live from Lake Wylie, South Carolina, and from Charlotte, North Carolina. Good friend, works with us here at Financial Help Services. A fellow investor is Tim Sykes. Welcome to the call, Tim. How you doing?
Thank you.
You doing all right?
Yeah, feeling a little bit better.
Good. Yeah, you're fighting the cold, aren't you?
Yeah.
Man, that's enough.
Kicked in on Monday.
I'm sorry?
Seemed like it kicked in on Monday.
I hear you. But you know what? The good news, you were still here, weren't you?
Yeah.
Had loans to close.
That's right.
People wanting to get deals done. That's great. Well, I hope you get to feeling better. And, Tim, I really appreciate you being on the call tonight because I know you don't feel well. But I thought it was important, and we're going to keep this real informal, but I thought it would be a really good thing to do. A lot of people that, as you know, investors that get loans, they're out here talking to myself and Wendy, and they hear and see kind of what happens on the front end. You know, you got to submit an application, you know, get us your tax returns and bank statements or whatever, but not many of them know what goes on behind the scenes. And I thought it would be great to bring you on and share a little bit of that with us, with fellow investors. And why don't you start out and tell us a little bit about yourself, Tim?
Sure. Well, my name's Tim Sykes, and I just moved to North Carolina about a year ago, originally from Pennsylvania. I worked for MBNA for about 5 years in the customer retention, credit card fraud, and worked a lot directly with customers as well as monitoring as far as what type of interest rates we can offer our customers.
Uh-huh.
I purchased my first house about 5 years ago, and my mom, of course, she's always, you know, don't buy a house, just stay here. Well, I took that chance, and I bought my first duplex. Everything worked out just fine, and from there, about a year or so after that, I bought my second duplex. So right
now, did you live in one side when you bought the first one?
Yes, I lived in one side and rented the top.
Because, you know, I noticed they do that a lot up north, a lot more than they do around here.
The cost of real estate in Pennsylvania, especially in Chester County, it's right outside of Philadelphia.
Uh-huh.
One thing you have to be really concerned about is property tax.
Oh, really?
The property tax was, you know, right around $2,500, and the price of real estate, like, you know, there's deals out there, but you have to go into, like, you know, like Chester or Philadelphia or Wilmington, Delaware.
Uh-huh.
And I wanted to stay, you know, for my first deal. I didn't want to put a lot of money into it because I really didn't know much about it.
Right.
When I first got started.
Uh-huh.
But when I purchased the house, I kind of learned when I first purchased it. They had a tenant in there already who was behind on their rent.
Uh-oh.
And, so I was like, well, before I buy this house, I want you guys to go through the eviction process.
Oh, there you go.
Well, they finally got the tenant out. I went in there, cleaned it up, painted it, and put down some nice ceramic tile in the kitchen.
Uh-huh.
And,
you don't have to replace that very often, do you?
No, one time.
There you go.
And we had a tenant in there.
Uh-huh.
And what they paid for rent just about covered the mortgage except for about $200, so I was, you know, quite happy with that.
Wow, that was sweet. And then you lived in the other side for $200 a month.
Yes, absolutely.
Oh, that's so pretty cool.
And the second house that that I purchased, the second duplex, was just, it was already occupied.
Uh-huh.
So I really didn't have to do anything other than buy the house, and it seemed like I was able to buy it at a discount. I probably got it at 80% loan to value.
Uh-huh.
Which is always good, especially for the location.
Exactly.
And from there, I met my current fiance, and we, we liked the area of Canada, but we just wanted to try something different.
Uh-huh.
And we moved to Charlotte. And when I first got down here, she had a job as a school teacher in the Charlotte-Mecklenburg School District.
Right.
And me, for the first time in my life, I was without a job. And for me, I was like, well, you know, hard to swallow.
Yeah, I bet so. We're moving to a city where, did you know many people here or anybody here?
Nobody.
Really? Wow, what made you choose Charlotte?
I chose Charlotte when I was probably around 18 years old.
Uh-huh.
To go to, down in like the Smoky Mountains and go whitewater rafting. And at one time, we actually stopped in Gastonia, and I was able to, you know, we stayed with family members for about 2 weeks, and I really liked the area. I was able to pick up a job relatively, you know, within a week or so. And so I worked for about 2 to 3 weeks in Gastonia, and then decided, you know, it's time to go home to, you know, go back to college and everything.
So you were just kind of stopping through and got a job for 2 weeks to keep you going.
Absolutely, yeah, just put some money in my pocket.
Oh, that's pretty cool.
From there, we moved down here, and we rented an apartment for a year. And me, I always like to fix stuff, so I knew, you know, renting an apartment wasn't going to last.
Right.
So, before I get ahead of myself, once I moved down here, I started, you know, inquiring about following my, you know, my dream is to be like in the mortgage business, loan officer, processor, underwriter. So I started going through the paper, and I saw an ad. And it was financial help services, and I called Larry, and I didn't know how to get into the business, so I spoke with him, and we talked for a while, and he told me what I needed to do to get my license as a loan officer. And during that time period, it took me about 2 months to get signed up for the class, and I actually had to drive from Charlotte to Raleigh to go to the class, but it was worth it. So during that time frame, I was a substitute teacher for Charlotte-Mecklenburg School District. So.
Were you really? I didn't know that, Tim.
Yeah, it was definitely an experience.
Was that high school students?
No, actually, I fifth through eighth grade. So it was. I definitely had a lot of fun because the kids are, you know, I guess whenever a new substitute's in there, and I'm easygoing and not real strict with the kids. As, you know, as long as they're doing what they're supposed to, we have a good time.
Sure.
But finally, in December, I got my took my test and passed the first time through. Contacted, and then I called Larry back and talked with him and told him who I was and asked him if he remembered me. And he offered me a job. I accepted it, and I started working for Financial Help Service in January 19th, and been there ever since.
Wow! It was January what?
I think it was January 19th when I started.
Wow. It's been a while now, hasn't it?
Yeah, definitely. Learned a lot.
And I'm telling you, Tim, you are a madman in the office. I mean, and I mean that sincerely. You really are. I mean, you're running around. You're doing what two or three people are doing and running back and forth and grabbing this and on the phone and putting this one on hold and grabbing that one and you know, copying this and running back to do that. Man, I don't see how you do it. I mean, how many loans do you keep processing at a time?
Right now, I probably have close to like 15.
Tim, you're doing not only loan officer processing and underwriting, all of that rolled into one now, aren't you?
Yes, and also, whenever I do talk to customers, we, you know, walk through the deal, make sure it, the numbers work, and it's in their best interest as far as to buy the house or even put it under contract. You know, sometimes we have to talk people out of, you know, buying houses, you know, because, you know, it's not a deal.
That's true, and the good news is you being an experienced investor yourself, you know, you can help make that call and help bring it to the investor's attention that, you know, based on your goals and what you told us you wanted to do, this really doesn't fit your goals or this is not a deal. You know, let's see if we can find you a deal or go find one at this LTV, you know, investment to value or whatever. You know, I'm a firm believer you shouldn't pay retail for an investment property. We, on the ones we buy and sell, we have to be able to sell them at 70% of the after-repaired value, including purchase price, rehab, and closing cost. But if you can go into a deal with 30% equity, you know, that deal should cash flow. If it doesn't, you shouldn't buy it. Wouldn't you agree?
Absolutely.
Exactly. Let's talk a little bit about what you do and about some of the different qualifying and some of the things you do. Now, tell us a little bit about qualifying for a non-owner-occupied financing, maybe credit score and the different kind of programs available.
All right. Well, first thing we're going to start talking about, we'll talk about how we get you approved as far as with your job situation.
Uh-huh.
There's primarily three categories. that we would classify a borrower.
Uh-huh.
We have a full doc,
uh-huh,
stated, and a no doc.
Full doc, stated, and no doc.
That's correct. Now, with a full doc loan, basically what that means is we can prove your income. You have you work for a company and you receive a paycheck. You have a W-2.
Right.
And the money that you make is actually reported and can be verified.
Uh-huh.
And they'll allow your debt-to-income go up to about 50%.
Uh-huh.
With a full doc loan, we can offer you 100% financing on non-owner-occupied units if you have a credit score of 680 or above.
Uh-huh.
And that's, you're able to buy the house. And also, you could negotiate closing costs up to 3%.
Right.
Now, with the stated loan, what that means is you have a job, and the money that you make, we don't have to verify it. We can state it at whatever we need to get you qualified for the loan.
Right, whatever the borrower tells us.
Absolutely.
Uh-huh.
Now, in some situations, that if we take your loan stated, we could close it a lot faster because,
uh-huh,
there's not as much red tape. They may
processing.
Not, absolutely. For a full doc loan, they may want to see your full tax return, all your schedules, your C and E.
Uh-huh.
Where stated, all you need is either a CPA letter confirming that you've been self-employed for the past 2 years, or we can get a verification of employment from your current employer.
Uh-huh.
And that's another way we can close your loan.
Now, can you be a W-2 employee and do a stated loan?
Absolutely. We can. We have several lenders that allow a verification of employment,
uh-huh,
where you're a W-2 employee, and we can still state your income and get a loan closed for you.
That's strong. And what's the price you pay for going stated versus full doc?
Normally, there's about 3/8 price difference between a full doc and a stated. So
3/8 of a percent?
Yes, sir.
In the rate?
So normally, it's not too bad, the difference between a stated and a full doc. Sometimes it's just easier to take a lender.
Sometimes it's worth it if you're in a hurry, right?
Absolutely. They closed, like one loan that I'm working on now, I sent the package in last Friday. It's,
uh-huh,
already been underwritten by the lender.
Right.
And it's clear to close as of today. Unfortunately, our borrower is out of town, and we have to wait for him to come back.
Right. Right. Yeah, got to have that borrower to sign.
Absolutely. And the last, the no doc program, these loans are a little bit harder to close, not as many lenders.
Right.
No doc means that you're not verifying anything. No work, no assets.
Uh-huh.
So you're not... So you're definitely going to pay in the interest rate because, you know, the lenders see it as a risk.
Yeah, absolutely. And the way the lender looks at it is the lender knows there's a reason you're going no doc, right?
Yes. And, they offer it primarily for owner-occupied,
mm-hmm,
units, but there's a few lenders that will do non-owner-occupied, but the rate is definitely much more than you would expect.
Right. But I guess that's the price you pay. And the further down the scale you go, as far as from full to stated to no doc, the better credit strength you have to have. Isn't that true?
Absolutely. Like no doc, you need a credit score in the 700s.
Oh, really?
Most likely.
And what loan-to-value are you looking at there?
If you're referring to a no doc purchase, you're probably looking in the 80s.
80s?
80, 85.
So that'll be a 15 to 20% down.
Absolutely. And that's out of your own pocket. Most of the time they don't allow sellers to hold a second on those.
Right, right. So, okay. Because some lenders will say 80% LTV with a 90% CLTV. Can you explain to everybody what that is?
Well, roll this in as if it's a stated loan.
Uh-huh.
Some lenders will say if you're trying to do a purchase, stated income, they'll allow like a 80% LTV, which is loan to value, and the CLTV is the cumulative loan to value. So they'll allow 80% from the lender and the 10% can be held by the seller.
Right.
And the other 10% you'll have to come out of your pocket.
It's cash out of pocket.
That's correct.
Wow. What are some things that you're looking for when you pre-approve a borrower?
Well, one thing that we primarily look for is we'll pull a tri-merge credit report.
Uh-huh. Which most lenders do now, right?
Yeah, most of the time they'll use the same credit report that we use. You don't have to worry about them, you know, all the different lenders pulling.
Oh, really? I didn't know that. Don't they pull one right before closing?
Some lenders may, but there's a few out there that'll just use our credit report as long as it's within 30 days.
Oh, really?
So with the Tri-Merge credit report, we basically look at the three scores, and we'll take the mid score.
Right.
And from there, you know, if you have a credit score of, let's say, you know, 640 or above.
Right.
We'll also take a look at, we'll need your tax returns.
Uh-huh.
Two most recent pay stubs if we're going to take you full doc.
Now, how many tax returns?
We normally start off with just your, the previous year. So if we're closing a loan now, we'd need your 2003 tax returns.
Uh-huh.
Two most recent pay stubs, any type of assets like 401k, IRA.
Mm-hmm.
Bank statement.
The statements from those?
Yeah, there's most recent quarterly statements would be fine. And that would also be the same situation if you're a stated loan. We would just need, you know, a CPA letter or verification of employment, which we would get from your employer, and the same information in regards to bank statements and assets.
Uh-huh.
Normally when we send in a loan, we would get a verification of deposit. And what that is just a single page that we send to your bank that they would fill out.
Right.
And they would indicate what your current balance is as of that particular day. And
yeah,
also
we call it a VOD, or verification of deposit, right?
Yes. And they also would indicate your two-month average in that particular account. And we would send that verification of deposit in instead of your bank statements, because we really want to keep bank statements out of the loan, because if somebody has, you know, let's say a direct deposit from their employer,
uh-huh,
and they're taking their loan stated,
uh-huh,
you know, they see X and they're telling us that, you know,
right,
more than that, then might be a little conflict of interest.
Now, you mentioned one thing, and I want to go back to a couple other things that you mentioned a minute ago, but you mentioned a two-month history on their verification and deposit. Why is that important?
Well, what they want to see is that you're not, like, let's say that you need $10,000 to cover the principal and interest tax and insurance payment for 6 months.
Plus your down payment.
Yes, for the reserves.
Right.
They want to make sure that the money has been there, that you're not borrowing it from somebody else.
That Uncle Bob didn't give you 10 grand last week.
Yeah, you're not borrowing from Peter to pay Paul.
Oh, absolutely. That's a
good
point.
So they just want to make sure that you are a sound borrower, that you have, you know, sufficient funds to close the loan.
Mm-hmm.
And in some situations, they'll, if with your investment, your 401k or IRA,
uh-huh,
you can use that as, you know, to cover your principal and interest. Tax.
Oh, really?
6 month reserve.
That's good to know. That is good to know. Now, what is it they call that? They want to make sure that money's been in there for a while.
That would be a seasoning.
Seasoning.
So 2 month seasoning on your bank statement. But, you know, they're pretty flexible. You know, if there's a big fluctuation,
uh-huh,
you know, you may have a concern. But if it goes up, you know, $1,000 or $1,500, I don't think we have too much to worry about.
Right. Yeah, but if your average balance is probably $1,500 and then all of a sudden you got $15,000 in there, they're going to want to know what's up.
Yeah, they'll want to see a paper trail.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Now, you mentioned something also a minute ago about we pull a tri-merged. Now, that's and take the middle score. Can you explain to everybody a little bit about that?
Well, with the three credit reporting agencies, we have, you know, Equifax, Experian, and TransUnion.
Right.
Each credit reporting agency, they use a different scoring system. They're very similar, but they do vary. So we're going to use the middle score just to be fair.
Right.
And the credit score is it's an evaluation of how well you pay your bills or what your current financial situation is.
Mm-hmm.
Now, some situations, you may not have the credit score that you deserve. You know, some people may have excellent credit, but they may have too many inquiries on their credit in the past 24 months, and their credit score, you know, could drop from too many inquiries.
Uh-huh.
Your credit score could also be affected if you have, let's say you only have one or two credit cards.
Uh-huh.
With, let's just use $1,000 on each credit card. That's your credit card limit.
Mm-hmm.
And you go out and you charge $1,000 on each card every month, and that will definitely affect your credit rating, because the way they look at it is, you know, your potential debt between the two credit cards is $2,000.
Uh-huh.
Your current balance is $2,000, so your utilization is basically 100%.
Right.
So they think that you're
maxed
out.
That makes sense. Never thought about it like that. And the credit score, it's just a snapshot in time based on the day that the credit's pulled, isn't it?
Absolutely. Now, your credit score, the way I see it, is since I've been working with it in the credit card industry for 5 years and directly with interest with the credit card interest rates, we used to pull credit all the time. And your credit score is pretty much, it's updated whenever your credit card statements print, like whenever your statement is sent to you in the mail.
Uh-huh.
That particular day, that's when they notify the credit reporting agency what your current balance is.
The day the statement prints?
That's correct.
Wow, I didn't know that. That's good information.
So if you have a credit card that you charge every month,
uh-huh,
and you pay it in full but you max it out, they don't know that you pay it in full.
Uh-huh.
So that's something that, you know, a lot of people I guess would take for granted, that you know, I paid in full and I should have great credit.
You have to wait till the next billing cycle, right?
That's correct. As far as whatever you see on your statement, what's going to show up on your credit report, that same dollar amount rounded.
Huh. Wow, I never knew that. That's good to know, though.
But they also take a look at, as far as your overall delinquencies.
Uh-huh.
That would also affect your overall credit rating.
Uh-huh.
As well as how well, if you have any derogatory information, that could be anywhere from hospital bills to slow payments, anything that would show up, judgments, all that information would show up, and you know, you would want to definitely try to get it cleared up as quickly as you can.
Exactly. Let's talk a little bit about how long it takes to close a loan, whether it be a traditional or a rehab-type loan.
Okay. With the traditional loan, the normal time period, it's right around 3 weeks.
Uh-huh.
I say depending, it would also depend on the borrower and who they use as who they use to appraise the property.
Uh-huh.
You know, some appraisers, you know, they take a little bit longer than others. And the appraisal will determine if we can close the loan or not.
Right. Well, sometimes we get all our stuff in, and we're waiting on the appraiser to email us the appraisal, right?
Absolutely. And that's something we can't send in a package or even underwrite a loan without the appraisal.
Uh-huh.
A lot of information is on the appraisal, such as age, taxes, the value, of course. And just to make sure that, you know, we also need to take a look at the comp just to make sure that this is a good appraisal, because if you send it into some lenders and they start looking at it, you know, next thing you know, your house is worth 70. By the time they're done going through the comps and their adjustments, next thing you know, your house is, you know, worth 60.
Exactly. That's true. Now, you've got a little bit of experience doing some underwriting here about reading appraisals. Tell us a little bit about comps and on appraisals.
Well, the comps that that we like to see, normally they should be within, you know, within 2 miles, and they need to be, you know, similar type properties. If you're comparing a ranch brick 3-bedroom, 1-bath, and they're pulling, you know, a comp that's vinyl siding 2-story. Really doesn't do you. There's no justification for that type of property to be even on the appraisal.
Uh-huh.
So something that we always look for is similar properties, and sometimes they may have to go a little bit further out, you know, a little bit further than the 2 miles. But as long as they indicate on the appraisal why they had to go further out to find similar comps with a similar age, that's very important, just to make sure you're, you know, comparing apples with apples.
Right. That's very important. You also mentioned about adjustments. What's important about the adjustments in the comps?
The adjustments that we're looking for is there's two different adjustments that they use. And what the adjustments are for is if there's comps that they're using, let's say the house that you're buying has a garage,
uh-huh.
and all the other houses that sold in the area, they don't have a garage. So
right.
Of course their house is going to be worth a little bit more money because it's going to be more desirable because you have an extra place to park your car.
Right.
Or a workspace. So with the other comps, they're going to have to add some additional value for not having a garage.
Uh-huh.
Now, there's different parameters that they'll allow the adjustments. Normally we don't want to see, the adjustments to be any higher than, let's say, 25%.
Now, that's gross, right?
Gross. Mm-hmm. And then there's also a net adjustment, which is we don't like seeing it any higher than, I believe, 15.
Okay. Yeah, that's a good point. What I guess would be even worse is your scenario turned around, whereas the subject house doesn't have a garage, but all the comps do. And I think one of the things that I heard, I don't know if it was Wendy or somebody in the office, had went to the appraisal course, and the instructor said, for every appraisal you look at, you need to look at it, and whichever house you'd like to live in the least, as long as it's not the subject house, it's probably not too bad of an appraisal. And I'm sure you heard that too.
Absolutely.
Exactly. I mean, if you're looking at an appraisal and you have a wood-sided mill house as your subject and the rest of them are brick ranches with a carport, there's something wrong with that appraisal.
Time for a new one.
Exactly. And, and I'd like to share with everybody too about the appraisal is we tend to use appraisers that are fairly conservative. We don't want anybody that's going to rip it apart and kill the deal, but we also are not looking to work with appraisers that are going to push the limit and pump up the values, because it may get one deal closed. However, if you're doing a rehab loan on this property and we're using an appraiser that's fluffing up the value and or pushing it as far as they can, we go to get that property refinanced and a lender kicks it out because it's not a good appraisal, then you're sitting there in that rehab loan and you can't get out of it. Or if you've bought a property to fix up and sell, or even if you've bought a property and it's in good shape and you've bought it and you're trying to retail it, if you're trying to retail it to somebody and their lender is cutting up the appraisal and reducing the value, then it hasn't done you any good to buy that property and resell it, has it?
No, not at all. We actually had a most recent experience with that. It occurred on Saturday.
Uh-huh.
We had a borrower who had a contract on a property.
Uh-huh.
He had a non-refundable deposit on the house, which is, over $2,000.
Ooh.
And she thought that the house was going to be worth $90,000.
Right.
And she had it under contract for, let's say, $30,000, and she needed about $30,000 worth of work.
Right.
Well, the numbers were working, but when the appraiser went out and did his job, the house only appraised for $60,000.
Wow, that's a 33% difference.
Absolutely. So, it was hard to tell her that, this isn't a deal. You need to find something else.
Uh-huh.
But, sometimes you got to look at it and convince the borrower, don't buy this house. We can't help you. You have money on the property, but, you just need to chalk it up as a loss and, make sure whenever you're pulling comps for your next house, if you're not sure of the area,
right.
You want to contact an appraiser. And if you use the same appraiser, a couple of times, they'll normally pull some comps for you without even charging you.
Uh-huh.
because they know that they're going to get, you know, some repeat business from you.
That's a good point. I know I heard Fred Hoffman say one time that he makes his contracts subject to acceptable appraisal for buyer, which that's not a bad contingency to put in a contract.
No, not at all. But I think in this situation, she actually purchased the house from an auction.
Uh-huh.
She was able to pull comps, but, you know, the comps she was pulling were just too far away. I mean, we're talking in a different city.
I wouldn't necessarily recommend an auction for a first-time investor either, would you?
No, not at all.
Yeah, it's there's a couple of things wrong with the auction. Number one, you have limited time to inspect the property. Number two, it's a done deal. You show up, you have your deposit, they're as is, where is, with no contingencies. So you're not allowed to do subject to inspection or subject to acceptable appraisal.
Normally they want 10%, you know, 10% down.
The day of sale. Exactly.
Non-refundable.
You know what the third reason is that I don't recommend auctions is, especially people starting out, going to an auction is really exciting. I mean, there's a lot of things going on, a lot of activity, people buying and selling and all that. But unfortunately, you can get caught up in the hype. And those auctioneers, it's their job. I mean, I love auctions, but it's their job to get the top dollar. And you can be get caught up in the hype and end up running up your bid and paying a lot more than you thought you were going to or than you anticipated. Have you ever seen that happen?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, it's kind of scary. So if you do go to an auction, you know, do your due diligence up front and just know that it's as is, where is, with no contingencies, and it's all cash sale. You need to have your financing lined up, and make sure you set a limit, and no matter what happens, don't go over that limit.
Definitely agree with that.
Yeah, exactly. Where do you see some investors making mistakes, Tim, and some ways that investor could help you as a processor, underwriter, originator to get their deal closed in a timely manner and get them the best terms and that sort of thing?
Most recently, I've been working with an investor who has quite a few properties.
Uh-huh.
Now, he bought some houses,
uh-huh.
Probably 6 or 7 houses, and what they did was they put them all on one deed.
Uh-huh.
And from that one deed, he also put it in his company name.
Uh-huh.
Now, the loan that he has on the properties, short
probably a commercial loan, isn't it?
Commercial loan. Well, actually, it's not a commercial loan. It's actually from a private lender.
Right.
Charging him, you know, aggressive interest.
Uh huh.
And he wants his, you know, basically the term on the loan. It's due, and he needs to refinance the properties.
Right.
Well, the lenders that we're working with, they're not going to allow more than one property per deed.
Uh huh.
So he has to have all the deeds changed.
Divided up.
Divided up, so that means you have to have a survey for each house.
Mm-hmm.
And they have to be recorded.
Legal description, all that good stuff.
Absolutely. So it's definitely time-consuming, and he's paying, you know, that high interest rate. What he should have done during the time that he purchased the properties,
uh-huh.
the rehab period, he should have had surveys done on the properties.
Right.
Recorded separately.
Uh-huh.
That way, whenever it's time to refinance it, it's already done. There's no...
It's ready to go.
Absolutely. We've been waiting over a month and a half to have the surveys, the deeds recorded.
Wow.
And it's really costing him a lot of money at
wow.
this point.
Well, you know, now we know. And it's a learning experience. And it's one of those things you work through and find out about and know not to do that in the future. You mentioned about in a company name. Tell us about, can we close in a company or LLC or a trust?
Most companies for traditional loans will not allow you to close in a company name or LLC or a trust.
Uh-huh.
There is maybe one or two companies out there that will allow you to close in your, you know, company, trust, or LLC, but what they're going to do is cut the loan to value.
Uh-huh.
If you want to close in a, you know, anything other than your personal name, the loan to value that they may offer on a refinance is let's say 65%.
Uh-huh.
And if you're doing a purchase and want to do it in, anything but your personal name, the maximum loan to value that they're going to offer on a purchase is 80%.
Oh, okay.
So it's definitely going to affect you if you're trying to cash out or, rate and term a property, that you have a little bit higher loan to value at this point.
Oh, okay. Now, what about even when you sell and it's in that company name?
When you sell the property?
When you sell the property and you've bought it in a company name, you fixed it up and you're going to sell it, does your retail buyer's lender have any problem with you owning that property short term and it being in a company name?
We don't. Our lenders they're not. They don't care as far as who's selling the property.
Uh huh.
I've only seen one situation where a company actually cared or had guidelines on who actually was selling or listing the property.
Uh-huh.
And that was a company that it was a owner-occupied purchase, and the people had credit problems, but we were trying to get them 100%.
Uh-huh.
And the only way they could offer them 100% is if the property was listed through MLS. That's the only problems that I've ever seen with the owner or any type of selling property.
Oh, okay.
But that's that's a rare case that we were all shocked when we heard it.
Wow. One thing I'd like to share right here is a little procedure to do to protect your assets if you can't really buy them in company names. Are you familiar with the way that investors are doing it to get it over into their trust or their LLC?
If you're buying a house and you buy it in your personal name after you close it and sign all the paperwork and the ink dries, they're doing a quick claim deed into their LLC or company name, and then it's just recorded, and that's your company or LLC is going to show up as current owner.
Right, and that's the way we've seen a lot of investors do it, even investors that own a tremendous amount of houses. They'll buy it in their personal name. They'll either do the rehab loan or pay cash or do a guidance line or whatever. And then once they refinance it and get into that long-term, fixed-rate, low-interest financing, once they get it in the rental fleet, so to speak, to use Fred Hoffman's term, once they get it in that rental fleet and have it set up with their long-term financing, then they can deed it over to either the LLC or you deed it over to a trust and make the LLC the beneficiary of the trust. And that way you have, a double layer of protection there for asset protection. What about rehab loans? Let's talk a little bit about that. What is a rehab loan or hard money loan, a lot of people call it?
All right. Well, rehab loan is definitely a great product. I handle all the hard money loans for financial help services from start to finish.
Uh-huh.
If they have any specific questions, if I can't answer them, I normally turn them over to Wendy, and she will help them with it. But a rehab loan will enable a borrower to buy a house with no money out of their pocket. That would allow them to buy it, and if it fix it, and also include closing costs.
Uh-huh.
And we'll loan up to 70% of the after repair value.
Right.
Now, at closing, we don't allow the borrower to receive any money, to start the project. So they're going to have they're going to need to put some money into the property or sweat equity.
Uh-huh.
To actually start receiving draws.
And exactly.
How this is set up is if you buy, let's say you buy a house and it needs new carpet, paint, and a new roof.
Uh-huh.
Well, you go in, you tear it, tear out the carpet, replace the carpet, paint, and you need some money, then you can fill out a draw form and send it in. We'll send out an inspector, make sure that the work is done, that everything looks, everything's within code.
Right.
And, if you're approved for the draw, you'll have your money within 24 to 48 hours so you can continue your
rehab.
That's
pretty fast.
And, you can have up to 5 draws per loan, and the term of the loan is set up for a year.
Uh-huh.
And during that period of time, you're making interest-only payments.
Uh-huh.
Now, the interest rate's a little bit higher than, it's at 15%.
Right.
But 15% will allow you to buy a house and, you know, with no money out of your pocket. And I just think that, you know, 15%, it's, you know, it may be hard to swallow, but, you know, after everything's done and over with and you're finished the house as far as the rehab,
uh-huh,
and you're ready to refinance it and get cash out, then, you know, you're seeing, you got to think of it as a, you know, a big picture at that point.
Yeah, exactly. It's, you know, hey, if you think 15% is high, try a partner. That's 50%. Right.
Absolutely.
Exactly. You say you can get up to 5 draws. Now, you wouldn't want to do that on a little $3,000 or $5,000 rehab project, but if you have a project going on with $10,000 or $15,000 or something, you could get up to 5 draws based on how much work was done at each draw, right?
That's correct.
And you've actually done some of these inspections as well, haven't you, Tim?
Yeah, I actually like going out to, you know, inspect the properties just to make sure that you know what they're putting on their original repair list, just to make sure everything is done, what they say,
right,
they're going to do is actually done. And, you know, most of these houses that I go and inspect, I mean, they're doing a great job, and you can definitely see that, the potential as far as for either cash flow or, you know, a retail or even wholesale after they're finished.
That's great. That's great. And the sooner they get it finished and get it in good shape, the sooner the appraiser can go back out and say, yes, all the work's done. It's, you know, now it is fixed up. And now you have a house that you're truly in at. It's 70% of appraised value and or less. And then you can refinance it, pay off the rehab loan, and you could even refinance it and pull a little bit of cash out probably, couldn't you?
Absolutely. I've seen, you know, some people, they, depending on where they are, let's say that they've had the loan a little bit longer.
Because uh-huh,
when you first apply for the loan, there is 4 points to close the loan.
Right.
And also there's every 90 days the loan will renew, and there is 2 points. So your ultimate goal is to finish it as fast as you can.
Right. So we don't have a prepayment penalty. We encourage you to pay it off early.
Absolutely.
Right.
Absolutely. We want you to pay it off and get out of the hard money loan.
And go do another one.
Absolutely. We put you into a traditional loan. Now, normally, if you're going to keep the house, we like to see you keep it for at least a year so we can keep our, you know, lenders happy as well.
Right.
But I've seen people, you know, cash out, let's say, from, let's say, $1,000 up to probably around $35,000.
Wow, that must have been a big loan.
Absolutely. The individual purchased the house for $100,000. It needed $17,000 worth of work,
uh-huh,
and it appraised for $195,000 the first time.
Wow.
And the second time, it actually, when the work was done, it had it reappraised for $196,000.
Wow, that's pretty strong.
Absolutely. And I was, you know, so 35 is the most, and we've seen a couple come in at cash out around $20,000.
Uh-huh.
You know, it all depends on how well you can negotiate, as well as you know, finding the deals and working.
Exactly. So what you're saying is, as long as you can negotiate and get a good enough deal, where you're in the property at 70% or less of the after repaired value, including purchase price, rehab, and closing costs, it's a no money down deal for the investor.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And that's the best part. Of these hard money loans, you know, people are able to buy houses with no money out of the pocket.
Uh-huh. You know, now, what do you need to qualify for that?
Now, a hard money loan, we like to see a credit score of at least a 640.
Uh-huh.
We want to see your most recent pay stub.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, tax returns or, you know, your W-2.
Uh-huh.
Your bank, any type of bank accounts that you have, and any type of investment.
Uh-huh.
We're also going to need a copy of your driver's license and Social Security card. And from there, you know, we're going to pull your credit and make sure that everything, you know, that you pay your bills.
Right. Now, a lot of the hard money loan, in the true sense of the word, is A hard money lender generally doesn't care what your credit is. All they're interested in is the equity in the property. But we're a little bit different in the sense that we want to make sure that we can get you out of that hard money loan. We don't want to put you into something that you're going to be sitting in 12 months from now and can't refinance and get out of it. That's not to say things don't happen and change. They do. But we want to do everything we can to ensure that investor that gets into a hard money or rehab loan, they can actually qualify to get out of it. So at any given point, they're ready to refinance, to pull out of the loan, and go back in and do it again for another house, right?
Absolutely. We're looking at it as we want you to succeed. And there's a lot of lenders out there that'll loan you the money, but their ultimate goal is they want your house.
That's true.
And the reason they want your house, the hardest thing about finding about these hard money loans is finding the deals, working the numbers. And, you know, if they're able to, you know, get your house without even negotiating anything and they see that the numbers are working, you know, that's, you know, a win-win situation for them.
Exactly.
And unfortunately, you know, you spend a lot of time negotiating, finding the deals, working on the property in some cases. But we want to make sure that, you know, the house is going to, you know, that you're in it for the right reasons. We want to make sure you are able to refinance the house, or, you know, your other exit strategy, of course, is to be able to sell the property. Now, one thing we don't want you to we don't want to see a listing on MLS. I mean, you can; it's totally your choice, but it kind of limits your exit strategies because most lenders, when you go to refinance it, they want to see they don't want to see the property listed on MLS first. At least if it's listed, you have to wait 6 months before you can refinance it into a traditional loan.
That is true. I remember that. It's not a good idea to send the appraiser out with the realtor's sign in the yard, is it?
No, not at all. Even some people, like, if your intentions are to sell the property, what we would recommend is, you know, put a for sale by owner. We also have 100% financing signs that you can put in your front yard to help advertise your house.
Right, or at least a rent to own sign.
Absolutely.
But leave it down while the appraiser's going out there.
Yeah, or take the signs out of the windows.
Exactly. Yeah, take them out of the window while the appraiser's there because they will make note of it.
They'll take some pictures too.
Yeah. Yeah, they will take pictures and make some notes of that. That's awesome. Man, Tim, we've covered a lot of ground tonight.
Yeah, I'm sure everyone, you know, it's going to be a lot of questions, especially, you know, when I first started in the business, what I really liked was the hard money loans. And the reason that I'm so interested in it is when I was in Pennsylvania, a few of my friends, their fathers, you know, of course they had, you know, they were established and had, you know, a little bit more money. They were buying a lot of houses in Chester, right outside of Philadelphia. But the best part about these houses they were buying them for like $12,000 to $15,000. Now, granted, they needed work, but they're right there, college town.
Oh,
and
really?
After they're done, you know, after they fix them, they rent for like $900.
Wow, no problem getting those rented.
No, not at all. People are lining up as far as the college kids to get into these properties. And if I knew what if I knew about hard money loans, I'm sure they offered them up there, but I just didn't know about them.
Yeah.
And you know, I probably would own more properties than what I own right now.
Yeah. Because you can get in and out of a hard money loan pretty quick if you do it the right way.
Yeah, there's
ultimate goal.
Absolutely. Normally, it takes we'd see the turnaround time anywhere from let's say I've seen as little as 30 days. You know, but normally the average, I would say, is probably right around 90 days is the average term of a hard money loan. It all depends on, you know, who's doing your work and if you have the contractors lined up
right
to go in there or if you're going to do it yourself, you know, how much time can you dedicate to finish the house.
Now, how quick can you close a rehab or hard money loan?
Typically, let's say we start on a Monday, I could probably have you close the following Tuesday or Wednesday.
Is that right?
Depending on the appraiser.
Uh-huh.
Some appraisers, you know, if they're not busy, they could, you know, get in there the following day and have, you know, the appraisal back, you know,
uh-huh.
within two or three days, we could probably close the same week. Or if you already have the appraisal done, we could definitely, you know, close, you know, within 3 or 4 days.
I guess that's the other good news about using a rehab loan as well, is you're not just taking the seller's word for it or not just making a lowball offer. We're actually getting, once you submit a property for us to do a loan on, you have to submit a job cost estimate with total numbers, and then we give that to the appraiser. The appraiser goes out to the house and says, if this work is done, then the house will be worth X.
That's correct. So it's definitely important that we get a strong appraisal because, you know, we're relying on that particular number
mm-hmm.
for the refinance.
Right.
And that's that's why we have the appraisers that we use. We don't use a lot of appraisers. I mean, you definitely have a choice of the appraiser you want to use, but we strongly recommend a few appraisers in the area.
That are familiar with investment property.
Absolutely. They know what we need, and we don't ask them to, you know, fudge the numbers at all. The house, we want it to be as true and accurate as they can possibly make it.
Right.
We're not going to ask them to, you know, can you make this house, set of 95, can you make it 100? We don't want them to do that.
No, we don't want to play that game. But by saying they know what we need, they understand that if they have a list of repairs to be done, they can do it subject to. Not a lot of appraisers like to do subject to appraisals, do they?
No, a lot of the appraisers, like we run into it from time to time. You know, appraisers calling up, you know, wanting us to, you know, send them some work, and you know, it's every once in a while we'll go out on a limb and we'll, you know, because we know, let's say we know the area, we know the house and what it's going to appraise for,
uh-huh.
We may, you know, send an a subject to one of our, to a new appraisal,
uh-huh.
appraiser, and, you know, they may take a lot longer and they, you know, they make it harder than what it actually is.
Right.
And they may be, you know, too conservative, you know, that just the value is just not justified in their appraisal.
Now, do many of the appraisals that we get, Tim, do they do rent comps?
Well, the subject to appraisals, we don't require the rent comps.
Uh-huh.
The rent comps are, we need them whenever you do a traditional refinance or a non-owner investment property purchase.
Uh-huh.
And what the rent comps are, we're going to throw out a couple numbers. There's like a 216 and a 1007.
Uh-huh.
They're basically the terms used to indicate.
For the form, right?
Yes, it's the form that they use to, I guess, evaluate what the rent, what the current market area rent analysis is for the property. That way, whenever the lender looks at it, they see that this property that, you know, it's renting for $600, well, that $600 seems to be an average of the area.
Uh-huh.
So you're not, you know, inflating or, you know, it's justified, I guess you can say.
It's like doing a sales comparison of the comps on the appraisal, except you're doing a rent comparison.
Yes, that's correct. Similar, and they, you know, basically they'll go around and they'll take pictures of the other rental properties that they're comparing it to,
uh-huh.
just to show that, you know, this house is receiving $700 and this house is looks just like the other house, so it's getting $700 too.
Uh-huh. Well, that's strong. That's good to know. You mentioned you can close a rehab loan pretty quick, but what is kind of the process a person would go through? I mean, you don't want to wait until you find a house and then say, hey, I need to go to apply for a loan, do you?
No. What we do is you can actually visit our website, which is financialhelpservices.com, and we have a lot of information as far as for investors, first-time investors, or even experienced investors, you know, talking about, you know, the different types of interest rates and,
right.
You know, common questions. I mean, there's just a list of questions, and, you know, that they go into great details as far as, you know, answers.
Uh-huh.
And from there, you can fill out an application, get pre-approved, and, you know, we normally, you know, give you a call back, you know, sometimes the same day, if not, you know, within 24 hours,
uh-huh.
just to go over your application, make sure everything's accurate, to find out what your goals are and what you're looking for, because we also, as Larry mentioned, we also sell houses, so, and I'm part of the, I enjoy selling houses, so once I find out we have a house available, I have like a list of people that I call and just let them know, you know, we have a house available, so we can also put you on that list. But the most important part is if you fill out an application, we get you pre-approved.
Uh-huh.
That way, if you find a, you know, find a house that you're interested in, you can act quickly, call us up, we can give you a pre-approved letter. That way, whenever you make your offer, you can turn in the pre-approved letter and they'll take your offer seriously. They know that you can close the loan and you can close it quickly.
Exactly. That's a good point, because I don't know how a lot of people buy their properties, but we buy most of ours from the bank. And I know the bank wants a proof of funds letter. And that's something that you can give our investors, can't you, Tim?
Yes. You know, as far as the pre-approved letter, let them know that, you know, you're pre-qualified, and, you know, for as long as the appraisal comes in, you know, we're pretty, and the title's clear, get this loan.
Exactly. Well, that's great. Well, how about we open it up for questions for a few minutes? You want to do that?
Absolutely.
Does anybody have a question for Tim?
Yes, this is Stephanie in Massachusetts.
Hey, Stephanie, how are you?
Hi, great. How are you doing?
Good. Thanks for calling.
What states do you give mortgage loans in?
Right now, we do mortgage loans in North Carolina, South Carolina, Indiana, Colorado, Wyoming, Arkansas, and Montana.
Great, thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Hello, does anyone else have a question? Hello? Do we have any more questions?
I have a question.
Sure, who's this?
To John, here in Charlotte.
Hey, John, how are you doing?
Hey, good. This question is for Tim about the stated loan.
Okay.
I know you were talking about the... I heard you talking about the full doc and the no doc and the percentages that were required as down payments. What about a stated loan? What's the most you can do on that? Can you do 100% or 90%? What is the...
As far as for a stated loan, most likely we're going to be looking right around 90%. It's the most common. You know, we may have... Depending on your credit situation, we may be able to go up to 95 on a stated purchase.
Now, would that be just a LTV, or would that include a CLTV, Tim?
That is an LTV.
Okay.
That'd be your LTV and CLTV. They won't go any higher than 95.
I'm going to check the other day.
No higher than 95.
That's correct.
Oh, okay.
You need it.
Good.
Now, I know that there's a lot of new lenders, you know, sending
you
us information. So it's very possible you may even might be able to go up to 100, but we haven't, you know, really clarified that
right.
You know, with any of the new lenders. But you know, they always receive stuff on the over the fax every day. But once we check into it, it may not be as.
Does anybody else have a question for Tim?
Hey, Larry, I had a follow-up question on that.
Sure.
Can you do? I know on the hard money rehab loan, can you do that as a stated loan also? I know you said you needed a 640 credit score plus tax returns and pay stuff.
That's a good question for Tim. He's our underwriter.
What we're going to do is we're going to look at your current financial situation. Are you a first-time investor?
Yes.
Okay. What we're going to do is we're going to look at a couple things. We're going to look at as far as your current assets and how much we have to actually state your income from what it actually is. But in those situations, you know, there is some flexibility. And we know that when we get you pre-qualified, we have to look at it as if it's a traditional loan, you know, because we have to be able to get you out. But that's if it's within reason, we should be able to, you know, get you pre-approved for this hard money loan as well.
Okay, thanks.
Great. Does anybody else have a question for Tim?
Yeah, I have a clarification and two quick questions.
Sure.
Okay. I just wanted to clarify that the 4% that are collected for the hard money loan is collected at closing, so you are actually paying a 15% interest on those points. Is that correct?
That is correct.
Okay. The other question is, do you have to escrow the taxes at closing to try to get your closing costs down so you can issue... more for the value?
Tim, can you answer that?
The taxes, depending if the taxes are due, but most of the time, let's say if you're buying a property in September and the taxes are due in December, you only have to pay. Normally, what they're going to do is they'll give you a credit for the 9 months. That would actually be a credit on your side as far as on the HUD, and you only have to pay for the 3 months from, you know, basically September, October, November, and you know, the December. But if they're due, your taxes are, you know, collected at closing for on the hard money loan.
And yeah,
okay.
And you don't have to escrow that for the next year either.
No.
Right.
All right. And the very last question that I have is, I'm getting ready to leave my current job and go into real estate and be a realtor broker. How would I be able to get a hard money loan if you need pay stubs for that?
How long have you been in the real estate business?
Well, I work for a builder now, but I'm getting ready to leave and then go get my license and be an actual realtor. So it's still the home building industry and sales, the same industry, but, you know, you only get paid when you close the deal. So I wouldn't have pay stubs once I became a realtor.
Okay, so right now are you a salary or W-2 employee?
Yes, I'm yes, uh-huh.
Okay. You know, here's where we may run into problems. Like, we need, like, a two-year job history, and what happens is if you're a W-2 employee and then you're going to go into sales as a real estate agent, that would put you as self-employed.
Right.
So you may have trouble as far as getting a getting the loan because you don't have the two-year job history that would be required as far as one of your exit strategies on the refinance.
Okay, so even though it's the same industry and I'm commission only with my builder, because I'm going self-employed, they need 2 years with the real estate agency in order to get a hard money loan?
That's correct. And I mean, in these situations, you know, if you have a partner or someone you can trust as far as to put the loan in their name, you know, what we normally recommend is, you know, don't quit your day job. Even if you want to, say, start your start as a real estate investor or real estate agent, you know, get your license, but keep your current job, and then once you're, you know, practicing or sell a couple of houses, you know, kind of like transition into a full-time agent. I mean, we're not saying, you know, don't do that, but that's something you might want to consider if you're planning on, you know, buying houses in the very near future.
Yeah, it does really limit you as to what you can do if you kind of quit cold turkey and start another thing, because especially for the traditional lenders, the takeout loans to get you out of the hard money loan, they're going to want to see a two-year job history. And if it's salary employee working with the builder up until last month, and now it's a self-employed realtor, that may keep us from being able to get you out of the hard money loan, and that's what we don't want to do, is get you in something that you wouldn't be able to get out of.
Do you currently have any rental properties?
We have three right now.
Okay. Well, here's do you have a CPA?
Yes. Uh-huh.
Okay.
How long have you had those?
One's for 5 years, the other two were for 2 years.
Excellent.
Okay. Well, I actually just purchased my first house in North Carolina in June, and I kind of went to the same situation. Like, I worked for MBNA. I was a W-2 employee, and when I started working for Financial Help Services, I had a gap in my employment. But I've been investing in real estate for 5 years. So I was able to, and I also have a CPA, and that's a very important thing, because he was able to write a letter saying that I've been investing in real estate for at least the past 2 years, and I was able to get a loan that way.
Oh, okay.
But it all depends on, you know, some investors, you know, they do their own taxes, and that kind of puts them at a disadvantage.
Start a business and stuff.
Right.
So if you have a CPA, you know, that kind of, it will open a few doors for you. So it's definitely a possibility.
Okay, great. Thank you very much, Tim.
Sure.
Good.
I have two quick questions.
Sure.
First, regarding, for example, a full doc loan.
Uh-huh.
And you take a quit claim from your personal and you put it into your LLC name.
Right.
Does that activate a due on sale clause or anything like that?
If you're the beneficiary of the LLC or the owner of the LLC, It's a member manager. If you're the manager member of the LLC, so you're still in control of it, our experience has been that the lenders will accept that and don't really have a problem with it.
Okay.
But if you're using transfer to a trust or to an LLC and selling the shares in that or whatever, and somebody else is the owner, then yes, the lender will not like that.
But if I'm the sole member of my LLC, there should be no problem.
There shouldn't be any problem, but always be sure and do this. Contact your insurance company and add your LLC as an additional insured on the policy.
Along with along with my name, both of them?
Absolutely, because the mortgage is still in your name.
Okay.
So add it as an additional insured on the policy, so that way both of them are covered. If something happens, the both names are on the policy.
Okay. And then my other question was on, for example, a hard money loan. What's the debt-to-income ratio on that?
That's a good question for Tim.
Are you referring to a full doc or
Just a standard hard money, a full doc's fine.
Well, no, we normally go up to about 65% because when we're underwriting the loan, we're looking at the current financial situation or the current property at 15% interest and interest-only payments. And that's based on a 12-month repayment where if we actually went into a traditional loan, the rate's going to be in the sevens, on a 30-year fixed rate or, interest only. So we'll be able to, realign or readjust your debt-to-income at that point when we refinance you out.
Okay.
5%.
One more thing also. I've had my a first rental house for the last year.
Okay.
And am I able to use that as part of my income or a certain percent of that as an income, or do I have had to hold it for longer than a year?
Yeah, that's a great question. What we look at is your rental income the same way as a traditional lender. And what they'll do is they'll take 75% of your gross rental income. So if you receive $1,000, we'll allow you to use $750 towards your debt-to-income structure.
Did I have to have held the property for a certain time for that to kick in, though?
No, there's no seasoning on that at all.
Okay. Well, thank you very much.
Sure.
Wow. Tim, I got to say, you've had more questions than anybody that has ever been on the Wednesday night Brain Picker Pro teleconference.
Makes me feel good.
Yeah, I'm serious. Most of the time it's two or three. I would like to remind everybody about we're having a boot camp October 22nd, 23rd, and 24th. If you'd like more details about that, you can go to www.larrygoins.com. We have a room reserved for 50 people. We currently have, I think, about 38 or 39 sold, so there's 10 or 11, 12 seats left, and I am offering a special. The price is $1,500, but if you sign up, so we can go ahead and get it put away, $9.95, and I'll throw in the Insider's Guide to Financing for Investors, which includes a lot of the information that we talked about tonight on the call, as well as understanding and reading appraisals, understanding and reading credit reports, all about the different type of loan programs, all about hard money, all the hard money loan documents that you need. That program is 2 volumes, 500 pages, 10 audio CDs, and 2 forms discs. And it's a $399 value. We'll throw it in if you come to the boot camp. But the price on the website is not $9.95, so you'll need to call me direct, and we'll take your order over the phone. You can reach us at 803-831-0056, 803-831-0056, and I am at extension 304, even if you'd just like to ask me some more questions about it. The boot camp's completely 100% guaranteed, and we're having 4 or 5 guest speakers. We're going to do a bus tour, go and tour properties under rehab. We're going to make live telephone calls with sellers, realtors, and tenant buyers. We're going to talk about asset protection, entity structuring, lease options, negotiating, an overview of the whole real estate investment industry. pretty much about everything to do with real estate. So there's a lot of details on the website, and if you have any questions, please feel free to give me a call. And Tim, once again, thanks so much for being on the call.
Oh, sure, not a problem.
It was a lot of fun, wasn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. And one thing, Larry, as far as like with your program, one thing that a lot of people, you know, don't realize is if they do have questions, they can call you up even you know, after they take this class and you know, walk through some deals or if they have any questions.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. So I remember when I first started, I always see those commercials where, you know, you call up and they'll, you know, send you all these videos and
yeah,
you know,
the no money down seminars.
Yeah. And there it was, you know, a waste. I didn't learn anything from it. And you know, you call people up, you call the company up, and you get a, you know, telemarketer on the line. It's like, man, I'm sending this stuff back.
I hear you. Yeah, that is one of the things that's pretty neat. Is we, you know, we're right here. If you go to one of the big national gurus' seminars or boot camps, you know, it's kind of hard to pick up the phone and call them on Monday morning. But you know, I'm here in the office every day. You know, I just gave out my phone number and my extension, and I'm right here. We answer phone calls every day, talk to people every day, answer questions, refer them to the website for freebies that are on the website. By the way, anybody on the call, if you haven't signed up for our free newsletter, please do that. We get probably 5 to 10 new subscriptions a day, and it's really growing, and we're expanding on that. So there's our beep saying we got about a minute or so left. Did you hear that, Tim?
Yeah.
Yeah, they let us know. I think they give us one or two, about two of those. So I'm going to go ahead and sign off, and thanks, everybody, for calling in. I appreciate it. Look forward to your calls. And if you enjoyed tonight, please shoot us some emails. Let us know. You can shoot Tim an email. Tim, would you like to give out your email address?
Yeah, my email address is tsykes76@msn.com. That's tsykes76@msn.com.
And would you like to give out your extension?
Same number, 803-831-0056, extension 324. If anyone's interested in some houses, just shoot me an email or give me a call. Let me know where you're interested in buying. If I, you know, some houses become available, I'll definitely.
Exactly, because the houses we sell them at 70% of value, so that way we can get them in no money down on the rehab loan, right?
Absolutely, all day long.
Good. That sounds great. Tim, man, I really appreciate it.
Thank you very much.
And thanks, everybody, for calling in. And everybody have a good night. And, Tim, I'll see you in the morning.
All right.
Thanks.
Thank you.
All right, bye-bye.